You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the number of people participating in the Wisconsin tradition of deer hunting has been slowly declining over the last few decades, but a young taxidermist is hoping to revive some of the sense of community in the tradition. Now, the head of Wisconsin's National Guard resigned Monday after a federal investigation found the Guard's handling of sexual assault investigations wasn't in line with federal law. The investigation came after whistleblowers contacted both U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin and Governor Tony Evers. In its findings, federal investigators issued 21 separate recommendations for changes they say the Guard should make to increase accountability and better support survivors of sexual assault and harassment. Laurel White is WPR State Capitol reporter. Laurel, thanks for joining us again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
How surprising was this resignation on Monday?
Well, it was pretty unexpected. Actually, the head of the Wisconsin National Guard, Major General Donald Dunbar, had actually put out a statement earlier in the day on Monday saying that he had been briefed on the report and planned to comply with all of its recommendations. And so I think there was kind of a perception that he was going to be there to implement those things after putting out that statement, but it was just a few hours later that the governor's office announced that they had requested and accepted Dunbar's resignation.
And what do we know about Governor Evers' thinking on this and why his office felt like it was a necessary step?
Well, in a statement released by his office, he said that he really thought that a top-to-bottom restructuring of the State National Guard was really going to be necessary to get at some of the systemic flaws in how they've been handling sexual assault and sexual harassment over the past several years.
And Major General Dunbar had been, as I understand, one of the longer serving directors of a state national commanders of a state national guard in the country. What do we know about his tenure up until this recent controversy about the sexual assault and harassment issues?
He has been around for quite a long time. I believe he was first appointed in 2007 by former Democratic Governor Jim Doyle, and then his appointment was reaffirmed by former Governor Scott Walker. So Republican and Democratic governors choosing him to head up the State National Guard, obviously a long tenure handling a lot of natural disasters in Wisconsin and deployments of servicemen and women from the state.
Well, let's dig into the findings of this report now. What did it say about how the National Guard here in Wisconsin had handled accusations of sexual assault and harassment?
I think the biggest takeaway is just that the State National Guard wasn't following federal law as well as federal guidelines for how to handle some of these investigations and the follow-up to investigations enforcements. Most notably, there was a federal law put in place by Congress that state officials needed to report sexual assault numbers and information to a federal database, so things like that could be tracked and processed. The state wasn't doing that. In terms of following federal guidelines and regulations, the state also wasn't following Department of Defense rules, Department of Army or Air Force policies, a federal National Guard Bureau policy about whether investigations into sexual assault and harassment are done internally versus externally. The Wisconsin Guard was conducting these investigations within its ranks. It wasn't referring them to local law enforcement as is prescribed in those guidelines, which is something that really stood out for a lot of individuals that were concerned by the report.
Talking to WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White about the dismissal of Wisconsin's National Guard commander after a federal report on how the Wisconsin Guard handled accusations of sexual assault and harassment. Remind us, Laurel, what triggered this federal investigation in the first place?
So a couple different things. Governor Evers and U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin both requested this investigation. They had been separately contacted by whistleblowers saying that they didn't believe that things were being handled appropriately within the Guard. A whistleblower had also contacted Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald and alerted him to an instance in which she didn't believe something she experienced had been handled appropriately as well. So this really started earlier this year in March of 2019, actually, when Governor Evers and Senator Baldwin requested the investigation after those whistleblower contacts.
Now, the Wisconsin National Guard needs a new commander. Has the governor given any indication of the timeline for bringing someone new into that post?
So he's named Brigadier General Gary Ebbin into the role now. So that's who's overseeing things as of now. The official final day for Major General Donald Dunbar is December 31st. So we've got a little bit of time before that happens, but the governor has named a replacement.
So that replacement will have a lot on the table, obviously, with this federal report. What kind of things could be changing based on these federal recommendations?
Well, an awful lot. The governor also put out an executive order on how some of these recommendations should be implemented within the National Guard. So he said that there needs to be a timeline. He said within 60 days of him issuing his executive order, there needs to be an action plan and how they're going to implement some of these numerous recommendations from the Federal National Guard. He also says that a general officer needs to be appointed by the Guard to give him monthly reports on how things are going. And then everything needs to be implemented according to the governor's executive order by September 1st, 2020. And then at that point, another federal review of the state National Guard's policies is going to happen. So a lot of oversight and a lot of reports to the governor about how things are going that really haven't been in place up to this point.
This was the federal investigation. Is there anything else going on still involving investigations of Wisconsin's National Guard or Air National Guard branch?
There is. So there is a separate investigation into Wisconsin's 115th Fighter Wing within the Air Force. Senator Baldwin requested that separate investigation by the U.S. Air Force after a whistleblower contacted her office about specific incidents within that branch. So there is some overlap because the Air National Guard obviously falls under the umbrella of the overall National Guard, but there's a separate investigation just looking at those air service members that we have yet to see.
And do we have any sense of the timeline on that separate report?
We don't have a timeline on that, so that could be coming anytime.
Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's Laurel White, State Capitol Reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. She is with us today to talk about the resignation of the head of Wisconsin's National Guard at the request of the governor's office and the findings of a federal investigation into how the Guard handles accusations of sexual assault and harassment. Coming up, despite a decline in the number of deer hunters, business is good for the new owner of a game processing shop. We'll get his perspective on the industry and the community coming up. That's up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll hear from a young Wisconsin business owner about the local demand for services like taxidermy and game processing. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about another taxidermist here in the state.
Wisconsin's hunting season is underway. After the meat has been packed up in the freezer, taxidermists often take on the job of mounting the heads of the harvest. Amanda Bestuel of Iola is relatively new to the business and one of the few independently operating female taxidermists in the state. She told WPR's Patty Murray that mounting deer and other animals after they've been harvested is a respectful thing to do. Plus, it's part of some Wisconsinites' heritage.
Oh, hey. Hi, Amanda.
Amanda Bestuel greets me at her front door and leads me down to her basement workshop, which is well-ventilated and equipped with freezers.
I got into taxidermy basically because I've always had an interest in animals, and I was a fan of taxidermy. I enjoyed looking at it. And when I moved up here, I married into a hunting family.
Do you think you would have been into this business otherwise?
That's a good question. And not one I've really thought about because this is where my life has brought me. But I think one way or another, I would have gotten into taxidermy, mainly because it was always in the back of my mind. But there was a little bit of women don't do that. And I think that kind of squashed the idea for a long time until I grew up and got the confidence to just do it.
Bestuel tans the hides of the animals, mostly deer. She has done everything from turkeys to a black squirrel and black bears.
To date, I would say my most challenging mount, I did a 3/4 bear, and it was most challenging because of its size and my size. It was a bit of a wrestle getting the hide onto the form.
Is there any animal you'd like to do you haven't done yet?
Gosh, there's so many I'd like to do. The next project I'm really excited about is to do my first bobcat, which I have in the freezer. It's ready to go, tanned. I just need to put it on the form in this freezer in here.
Bestel finds the cat's hide and pulls it out of her freezer that looks like it could be in any suburban basement.
You know what? The bobcat's right here.
Instead of a frozen pizza or chicken nuggets, she pulls out a bobcat pelt. Bestel and other taxidermists generally tan the hides of animals, then put them on a type of sculpted form similar to styrofoam. They add glass eyes to make the specimens look alive.
This was actually a roadkill bobcat that a customer picked up, and it was in good shape. That's another way to get specimens for taxidermy.
Bestel feels she's honoring the animals that have been killed. She also says most customers eat the meat.
Rarely do I buy any meat from the store that's been, you know, produced from factory farms and all that. It's, you know where your food's coming from, and I think that's important to a lot of people.
That story about taxidermist Amanda Bestuel of Iola came to us from WPR's Patty Murray. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every single Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast feed and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on all the social media. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, this year's deer harvest numbers during the gun deer season were down, in part because of rough weather in a lot of the state, and the actual number of hunters participating in the Wisconsin cultural tradition has been slowly declining in recent decades. But despite that, one 27-year-old Wisconsinite is feeling optimistic after purchasing his uncle's game processing business this summer. Alex Lease is the owner and operator of Outdoor Addictions, a shop that processes game meat, provides free CWD testing, and offers taxidermy services based in Blue Mounds. Alex joins us in the studio now. Alex, thanks a lot for coming up today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you got into the processing business and you bought the building, I guess, from your uncle this summer.
You've been
at taxidermy for quite a while now.
How did you first get into this? Yeah, so I grew up hunting and fishing, and it was probably my most favorite thing to do. I spent about all my time that I had free time doing it. And, you know, I decided one day that I did want to start my own business, and I picked that out of nowhere. I just picked it and went with it, and it's turned out pretty good so far. We've been doing it for 8 years now.
And it's not something that you hear young people getting into all the time, I don't think.
Not that many. It's definitely less and less each year, I would say. Most of the taxidermists out there are older generations. There are a few getting into it, but it's definitely less than there used to be.
How do you learn something like that? Or who do you apprentice with somebody? How do you even get into that?
That's a good question, because when I first started, I was wondering the same thing. So I did some research online, found a school, went, did some training, got my toes wet, and then after that, I did stuff for friends, family, and word kind of travel a little bit. And then I started learning newer techniques on my own, doing a little innovating. And yeah, ever since then, you know, we've been trying lots of new stuff and always trying to stay ahead of the game.
Yeah, and you know, you think of this as kind of an old time thing, but you've also, you know, if you got your website, your blog, you are trying to kind of bring it into the 21st century
in some
ways.
Oh, absolutely. You have to nowadays. And we're doing a podcast too, Outdoor Addiction Podcast. So yeah, we're trying all different platforms to get our name out there.
And now a big issue for hunters, we've been talking about this on the Ideas Network for, 20 years now, is chronic wasting disease. CWD, people call it, this disease affecting the deer herd in the state. You are in a place in Wisconsin where it's a big deal.
We're in the hot zone. Basically, it started, I would say, It's about 5 miles from my shop where they found the first case in Wisconsin. So
really?
Even 20 years later, it's still a hot topic.
And so that as part of your business, you offer, I understand, free CWD testing when people bring deer carcasses.
Yeah, absolutely. We're basically a middleman for the DNR. We'll pull the samples, we'll do the paperwork, and then they come pick it up, and then they get their test results back.
And do you see hunters being worried about this, especially in your part of the state?
Some do, yeah. It's pretty split. You know, some people, you know, they for sure want to test it, and they're not going to eat the meat. On the other side, you get people that will test it and will eat the meat, even if it's positive. And then you get people that don't test at all. So more and more tests each year, though, for sure.
Right. And people are encouraged not to eat that meat, though there's no, as I understand, evidence that the disease has ever gone from a deer to a human. But
that's correct.
I think people are, I think, it better safe than sorry.
Yeah. And we actually just came out with a new policy, too, that we just rolled this out a couple weeks ago, that we will hold your deer for testing, and when the results come back, then we'll move forward with the processing. So No one's done that yet. This is a really big thing we're offering now.
Talking to Alex Lease, owner and operator of Outdoor Addictions. He offers game meat processing, free CWD testing site through the DNR, and taxidermy services. Now, you've got these services, Alex, but I understand you've got kind of a deeper mission here to try to get some sense of community back for hunters.
That's right, yeah. They took the registrations away a few years ago, and most people miss that. You know, you pull your truck up to a gas station where you register deer or wherever that may be, you know, a bar, and, you know, you get to walk around, talk with all the different hunters, hear the stories, see the deer, hear the misses, hear the successes, and everything in between. You know, when that went away, you know, people
you can
really
do it on an app now, right?
Basically, yeah. So now people come to our shop more and more each year, and we're kind of trying to bring that back, you know, get a lot of people in. We have something for everyone. We had a cookout this year, coffee. You know, we're just trying to bring that camaraderie back.
And what do you hear from hunters who maybe missed that old, you know, the requirement that brought them in to, you had to show up at a place?
Yeah. People definitely miss it more than not, and they're glad to see us doing something about that, and it's really starting to catch on, so we're onto something with that for sure.
Now, for hunting in a state like Wisconsin, there's some people who grew up with it. It's just a part of life all the way through.
Yep.
And then some people, they've never done it. It's kind of, you know, it's something that other people do. How would you explain that sense of that that cultural community around hunting to the people who haven't been out doing it?
To the people who have?
Who haven't, I should say.
People who haven't, you just got to experience it because you're missing out. You know, gun deer season's been around longer than the mm-hmm. Packers in Wisconsin. So there's some really deep-rooted stuff going on here.
Now, I imagine, I assume gun deer season is
yes.
really your peak season, but that's
it
over.
Is.
But archery season, I think, is still
yep.
going
yep.
on.
And there's muzzleloader season, uh-huh. and then there's some antlerless gun hunts yet to come, too. One actually starts tomorrow. So there's a couple little gun seasons, but bow season goes till basically January.
Now, as far as your level of activity,
yeah.
What is it like gun deer versus the other kinds of deer
gun
hunting
deer
season?
Gun deer is just super out of control. It's wild. We get hundreds and hundreds of deer in a very short amount of time, but it's my favorite time of year by far.
Yeah. Now, what's that like for you? Do you like, I don't sleep?
Not too much that time of year. But, you know, you got to get it while it's good, right?
Mm-hmm. And so, do you bring in extra help that time of year?
Definitely, okay. Yeah. So on opening weekend, we had 8 people on Saturday and 12 people on Sunday.
Now, does somebody in your line of work get out and actually get to hunt himself?
I don't.
Okay.
Not this time of year. You know, I would say most of them do occasionally, but I took a few years off. I used to hunt every day. That my outdoor addiction was hunting. And now it's my business. So, you know, I enjoy that just as much, and I get to see all the trophies come through. Like, I love it. It's awesome.
And yeah, let's talk about the name of your business, the
yeah.
Outdoor Addiction. Where yep. did that idea come from?
Well, I used to be addicted to hunting, right? And I hunted a little too much, maybe more than I should have, and I should have spent a little more time on my working. So I kind of transferred that into my business. And everyone that hunts too, that is an addiction for them. They love it. They're all in. They get the clothes, they get the gear, they got the truck, they got land to hunt at. I mean, it is definitely an addiction for most people.
Now, for people, you know, maybe in their senior year of high school, or they're a couple years out and they're thinking, I got this thing I love, I would love to do this as a career. Well, you've done that, basically. What advice would you have for them, whatever line that might be?
Yeah. Well, we actually, you know, we have a few employees too, so that's another part of my business model, is to give people an opportunity to learn the trade and, you know, make a living doing it, not just doing it on the side too. So, yeah, if you want to do it, you know, feel free to reach out to me with questions. I'd love to answer them and point you in the right direction.
Now, we mentioned at the beginning, we've seen the number of people hunting going down gradually over the decades.
Slow
and I've heard
steady, yeah.
definitely people say, hey, we're aging out of this. The
yes.
older hunters are, you know, retiring or maybe getting too old for that,
yeah,
and
yeah.
the younger people aren't following them up. Is that something that worries you as part of the
tradition? It
doesn't
worry me, but I do want to get the message out there to, you know, take kids hunting if you can. Mentor them, teach them, because that's what's going to keep it going is the younger generation.
Now, what about that person we were talking about earlier, the person who hasn't been part of this tradition ever and didn't get brought up with it, say, by their parents? How would you suggest to them if they want to check it out to get started maybe next year's season?
Yeah, there's a few different ways. I would say, you know, if you're in Wisconsin, you can find someone that has gone out and just, you know, reach out to them, ask them some questions. Maybe they'll even take you out. There's public land in Wisconsin, you know. You can go out, utilize that to its full capacity. Go on the internet, type some videos in on YouTube. You can learn a lot. You'd be surprised.
Now, you do taxidermy, and
yep.
Obviously I'm imagining deer heads will be a big part
it's
of your
big
work.
A chunk, yeah.
But talk about, that's not the only thing you
do.
Not,
we
do. Talk about the kind of variety
yeah,
you have.
So we do everything from birds, like ducks, turkey, fish. We do exotic stuff. We did some stuff from Africa this year, life-size bears. Wisconsin's a big bear state, too. So, yeah, deer is a big part of it, but we do everything.
Mm-hmm. And talk about the value of that taxidermied memory for somebody of that successful hunting season.
Yeah, so it is a cool line of work just for that reason. You know, someone brings us something, and we're recreating their memory, essentially, and they're going to have it the rest of their life. So, I mean, it's a pretty important job.
Okay, so you say you're always trying to stay on the cutting edge here. Anything
yep.
you have in the works for 2020?
Well, like I did mention earlier, the new policy for holding mm-hmm. CWD, holding for the test results, that's huge. And I think we got a couple other things in the work, too, that I'm not going to even mention yet. But
okay.
we're always going to be on top of the game and always adding new things.
And do you have a good supply stowed away of, venison sausage and jerky to keep you through
always.
To the next year?
I'm eating good.
And where are the samples? No samples.
Oh,
that's
some.
Okay. That's
Damn.
Okay. Alex, thanks
check.
A lot. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you.
That's Alex Lees, owner and operator of Outdoor Addictions, a shop that processes venison, provides CWD testing, and offers taxidermy services. He's based in Blue Mounds. He joined us to talk about his experience as a young business owner in the hunting tradition. Coming up, with so many streaming and television options, it can be tough to decide not only what to watch, but also how much. We talk with a psychologist about what our TV habits tell us about ourselves. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent and her guests look at the latest efforts in Congress to tackle the high cost of many prescription medications. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, we recently talked about a new streaming option, this one Disney Plus, on the show, and are many options for how to watch and consume TV shows. But on a deeper level, what do we get out of watching TV? What's in it for us? Is it an active hobby or a passive waste of time? It's a new age for TV content and a new age for TV watchers. We want to hear from you. What are your TV habits like? Call in at 800-642-1234. How much TV do you watch? Why do you enjoy it? Do you watch it live when it broadcasts, or do you stream things, binge watch? Do you watch with friends or family members? Do you consider it a hobby? Or do you feel bad about how much TV you watch? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Regan Gurung is Executive Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning at Oregon State University and Professor of Psychological Sciences. He's joined us several times before as a professor back in the day at UW Green Bay. Regan, good to have you back with us.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Great to be back.
Well, there's so much TV out there and so many ways to watch it, but there's been this ongoing debate, I think, since the first TV screen was flipped on. Is this bad for us? Is this something we should worry about, how much we watch TV?
You know, Rob, this is one of those classic cases of, is technology ruling us or are we ruling technology? And, you know, whether the conversation is a smartphone or anything else, I think it starts with we have control, and the more we can empower ourselves to make better decisions, the better off we are. Now, I think the issue is that TV is getting more ubiquitous, and you see it everywhere. I mean, you know, recently you're filling up gas and there's a TV screen there, you know, and I've caught myself watching for a few seconds and then going, you know what, I'd much rather look at the scenery than watch some more TV. So I think it's the big issue is, are we paying attention to how much we watch? And I think far too often, it's really easy to start watching something and not pay attention to what we're doing. So this is a classic case of how much are you doing, what else are you doing, versus a black and white, it's good and it's bad.
Right. And there's a lot of great TV out there. People keep talking about for years and years now, this being a golden age of TV with great shows and more things available for everyone. Is there a case to be made that, hey, this is a positive hobby, being into TV? Or it could be, you know, along the lines of if you're a film buff, you like going to the theater to see movies.
Well, you know, first off, I'm going to be a little crazy here and say, just because there is great TV, even if there's horrible TV, it can probably still serve a purpose. And I say that, because I think you got to look at why you're watching TV, right? I mean, sometimes there are many of us for whom TV is a coping mechanism. It is a opportunity to step into a different world and step away from our realities that may be stressful or, with outside our control. But with TV, we've got some control in terms of picking what we want to see, when we want to see it, and suddenly we can be launched into this wonderful world, getting the things that we may not be getting in our actual world. And I think, you know, there's a great book out there that was written in the context of video games called Reality is Broken. And I think a lot of the arguments there that for many of us, our realities are broken, that our realities are difficult, can apply here. And so I think, you know, you could be using TV as a coping mechanism. You could be using TV as a way to vicariously do things that you couldn't be able to do. And especially right now with the variety of what's out there, you can learn to do a lot of things that you've always wanted to learn to do by watching some TV shows. I know my cooking skills have gone in many new directions because of some of the shows I've been watching.
There's a phenomenon people talk about on the internet a lot and in social media, the FOMO, fear of missing out. And I think that applies to TV. Yeah. You hear about all the great shows that are out there. And I definitely feel this to the point where I've just given up. I stopped trying to even keep up with all the stuff out there. How do we cope with this sense that there's so much good stuff out there that it can be overwhelming?
You know, and I think this is where I think you're relying on friends and family and your network to give you some tips of what to do. I know one of the things my wife and I love to do is ask our friends what they're watching, because for the most part, our friends are people who share our interests, and therefore, for the most part, what our friends like, there's a good chance that we will like too. So I think that's, for me at least, and I think a nice rule of thumb is use those natural pre-selection mechanisms, your friends, see what they're watching, and very often they'll do your homework for you. And I think I see that with social media. I mean, I look at what a lot of my friends are talking about on social media as far as TV shows go, and more often than not, those are some really good hints of what I should try out as well.
Talking to Oregon State University psychology professor Regan Gruing about TV, our TV habits, the psychology of TV watching. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see TV as a positive, fun hobby, a waste of time, a little bit of both? Let's go to a caller now. Tim is with us in Portage. Tim, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What's your story, Tim?
Well, I like coming home, watching some TV after work, and just kind of relaxing to it and not really making it all that big a thing. I play some video games. The kids, they come over. It's wintertime right now. So, I mean, the question of being whether it's too much or not. In the wintertime, I let them watch what they want to watch. You know, I try to keep it simple and everything, and I try to do that for myself. But in the summertime, let's get outside, let's go do some things, and just, you know, be active and not be such the big couch potato all the time.
That sounds pretty healthy. Tim, I want to ask you, Tim, before we let you go, how do you watch TV today? Do you turn on a channel on cable or whatever and watch whatever's on? Do you pick something and stream it? What do you and your family do?
Well, we We use the Xbox a lot to watch streaming television. I'm not a big commercial person, so we sit and pick something that we all like to watch on Netflix or Hulu or something like that, and we just stream episodes. It's kind of more like binge-watching stuff.
Tim, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. Regan, Tim gave us a lot to work with there. And I want to talk about that thing he was talking about there at the end. It's not just him watching. He and the family are watching it together. Does watching TV mean something if, you know, I'm holding a screen to my face versus I'm doing it with friends or family?
Well, absolutely. And I think it's how we watch TV when we're watching it with the family that can make a big difference. I think, you know, when you think about, I mean, and you're absolutely right, Tim hit about at least three or four really cool things about TV here. But let's start with the family one. And I think, you know, what are you doing when you're watching TV with the family? It's a great opportunity to talk about things. And how you watch makes a difference, too. I mean, I know recently my family watched through the whole PBS Sherlock Holmes series with the kids there. And it was a great opportunity to share do something different with family time, but also an opportunity to talk about, you know, different real-world things that they were seeing that we could talk about, and especially with family. And I think the note about kids is key. It's a lot easier for adults, a lot easier, not always easy, but a lot easier for adults to have control about when to stop and when not to. But for a lot of kids, it is, you know, they put it on and it's very hard to control. So especially when you're watching TV with your kids, you can really model good TV watching behavior. One other thing I do want to say is Tim mentioned the coming home and watching it, or I think we are all very conditioned to do certain things at certain times. Mm-hmm. And once we get used to it, it can be this relaxing kind of thing. You come home and you spend a little time, you know, doing something relaxing, and TV can be a good part of that as long as there's a lot of different things going on, which, of course, Tim also mentioned.
Thanks a lot for that call, Tim. And Regan, that also makes me think sometimes when I watch TV or a movie for that matter, I want something deep and engaging that makes me think. And it's something, I want something stupid that's going to shut my brain off for a while. Is that okay? Is there a value to that?
And, you know, that's why I said the great shows don't have to be great shows. If it's something that keeps your interest, that may be exactly what the doctor ordered.
Talking about TV viewing habits, what you enjoy about watching, if you worry that you watch too much TV and more, Regan Gruing is with us, Executive Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning at Oregon State University and Professor of Psychological Sciences. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you watch a lot of TV? Do you ever wish you watched less? Do you consider it a hobby? Do you carefully pick the things you're going to watch and stream and maybe binge watch? Or do you like to flip on whatever's on? Do you do quality TV, however you define that? Or do you want something mindless every now and then? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Regan Gruing. He's a professor of psychological sciences at Oregon State. We're talking about our TV viewing habits and what they say about us. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has your TV time gone up or down since the start of streaming services? Do you still enjoy it? Do you think you should watch less? What do you like about watching TV? Does it count as a hobby if you are into TV, and do you watch it alone or together with friends or family? Call 800-642-1234. And how do you set rules for what kids watch? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go back to your calls now. Amanda is with us in Stevens Point. Amanda, hi.
Hi. The comment that I have is that I sometimes, when I'm missing people, I find myself trying to find something that reminds me of them. Specifically, my dad passed away last year, and I find that, you know, watching shows that he would watch, mostly police or crime dramas, like CSI or Law and Order especially, it brings him back. I moved away from my parents about a decade ago, and I was doing that when I was missing him then, and I do it now more because, you know, I miss him so much.
Oh, Amanda, thank you so much for sharing that story. I really appreciate it. Regan, this way of connecting, in this case, with a lost loved one.
Yeah, you know, and very often, especially when we're younger, and we talked about watching TV with kids, very often when we're younger, and if we get really used to watching TV with a certain person or with certain people, automatically we tend to associate those shows with the people and sometimes those people with the shows. And I think that link, especially if we do it very often, even later on when those people are no longer there, watching those same shows automatically, because of conditioned responses, bring back some of those memories. And, you know, just like Amanda, you know, when Amanda was telling us about, you know, her dad, I was thinking about watching TV shows with my grandmother, who's been dead some years now. And I just think about all those TV shows, and when some of them pop on TV, I actually feel myself having all these positive feelings about my grandmother, and it's some great point for recollection. So I think sometimes those events, especially TV, especially if it's a Sunday football game, those may be some of the few times that in this busy world people can actually get together. So it's not surprising, I think, that we make those linkages, and that those linkages later on can serve a very, you know, good purpose.
Amanda, thanks again for sharing that story at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Barbara with us in Fenimore. Barbara, hi.
Hi.
Hi. What do you want to tell us about, Barbara?
Well, I do like to watch TV, but we only have Netflix now and a channel that comes with our smart TV. And the cable is so expensive that we don't have that. But we watch a series. Now we'll find a series that we like, and we'll watch that every night for like an hour in the evening. And the only thing we stream are the football games, because we got to have our Packers. But or otherwise, I just have the TV on like when I do housework and just have a background noise.
And Barbara, that sounds really disciplined. You really hold yourself to 1 hour or one episode a night? You don't ever get tempted to cheat?
Well, you know, if we do, then we did it with one series, and then it just ended so quickly. So we try to keep it to one series a night.
I love it. Barbara, thank you so much for sharing that. Regan, the battle between, you know, one episode a night like Barbara does, or binge watch and get it done.
Well, I think interestingly enough, Barbara has a built-in strategy that helps, which is not necessarily having many channels or network opportunities. And I think right there is something to build on. Most shows nowadays, you can get them, you know, in the complete set from your local library. And one of my favorite tricks that really helps me make sure I don't, you know, that it's easier to not binge watch is pick the shows that I really like once their complete season is done from the library, and that way I can have a lot more control over turning things on and off, or when I can have things. But the trick is, if you find yourself very easily going from one episode into the next episode, or switching with all the many options you have, you really need to build in some ways to stop that happening, because what we know from psychology is that the more variety we have, the more we can dive into it and the more we'll consume. And this is the case with food, but it's also the case with TV watching. If you have many options, the likelihood that you will find yourself going in for a lot more of them increases dramatically.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking about the psychology of our TV watching habits with Regan Gruing from Oregon State University. Back to your calls. Anita is with us in Lindenhurst, Illinois. Anita, hi.
Hi. We don't have cable either. We have two antennas on our roof, Milwaukee and Chicago, and we get 36 channels.
Wow.
I can put that out there. But at any rate, so we have a computer hooked up to the TV. We program once a week all the programs we want to see. But lately, I've been really grateful that we've been doing that, because when we watch the impeachment hearings, then the next thing I'm going to watch is going to be something like The Conners, something that's really funny, or maybe something really, really delightful on PBS. Got to strike a balance.
Anita, thank you so much. I kind of feel the same way sometimes in my line of work. Regan, the idea of, you know, balancing out the heavy reality sometimes.
Well, I think it's balancing out the heavy reality, but, you know, especially in Anita's case, when she mentioned all the access that she has, for those individuals who don't, who, you know, watch what they're doing or find it hard to, a really key question, I think, to ask ourselves is, if you find yourself watching a lot of TV, you got to ask yourself the question, what else is it keeping you from doing? And I think sometimes when we ask that question, the answer, you know, may be sort of surprising, where we find out that, oh boy, you know what, we really haven't been doing too many different things. So, you know, watching it as a coping mechanism, as a nice comic break from the scary things and the harsh political realities of the world today, that's great. But I think that it's very easy, because that can be so rewarding, that if we don't watch it, we can just keep going for that reward and then miss out on doing a lot of other things that could help as well.
Thanks a lot for that call. Laura joins us next in Antioch, Illinois. Laura, hello.
Hi. Yeah, I was actually calling because I had an interesting thought when you brought this up. I was thinking I pretty much exclusively stream off of my smart tablet or my smartphone, which are really small screens, and it makes it possible to watch anything I want anytime. So I find myself now taking them to the gym with me, and I'll be actually exercising more than I would have with how I dressed.
Laura's breaking up there, but she was talking about bringing that tablet or smart screen to her gym with her. We'll just touch on that point, Laura. Regan, Laura, yeah. Saying that TV can make, I was talking about this on the show earlier, the exercise a little more fun.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, there was an interesting study that was done on TV watching that directly relates to this, which is when people watch TV, their metabolic rate actually drops below even when they're at rest. So think about that. I mean, here you are resting, and now you are rest, and many of us think of watching TV as rest, but somehow that act of watching TV drops your metabolic rate even more. So if we are just sitting down on a couch watching TV, our metabolic rate is dropping, and in that same study, it was more related to chances for obesity or gaining weight. So taking it to the gym, or even, you know, walking, you know, with headphones on, I mean, not, you know, watching it, of course, but listening to things, or being on a treadmill or something like that and getting your favorite shows, that's a really good way to go. And I know many of my colleagues fit in their TV watching guilty pleasures while exercising, and doesn't feel, you know, not too much to be guilty about.
Now, Regan, how about that person who's listening and says, okay, yeah, maybe I do watch too much TV and I'm missing out on other, maybe better stuff. What's your advice to them to try to shift that time a little?
Well, I think, you know, even if you haven't even asked yourself the question, are you missing out on other things? A really good thing to start off with is taking a look at how much TV you do watch, because often when we don't pay attention, when we don't self-monitor, we miss things. And a first step would be, just for 1 week, take a look at how much TV you watch, and take a look at what else you're doing. A week later, look at that list, and it should probably tell you straight away whether there's something that you need to do or not. But I think self-monitoring and self-observation very consciously is the first and most important step, because, you know, just watching TV by itself is not neither good nor bad. It's how much are we watching? What else are we not doing? That becomes the more critical issue.
And just in a few moments, all that said, Regan, what are you into watching these days?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, right now, these days, with the end of the semester, there's lots of grades to be entered, so
uh-oh,
not too much TV at all. But looking forward to watching a lot. And, you know, you mentioned Disney Plus. I'm extremely intrigued by the new Star Wars, The Mandalorian. So that is the next time I have some TV watching time, that is what I'm going to try and get my hands on.
Well, say hi to Baby Yoda for me. Regan, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
That's Regan Gruing, Executive Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning at Oregon State University and Professor there of Psychological Sciences. He joined us to talk about our TV habits, how they've changed, what that might mean for our well-being. You can still share your thoughts and experiences on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, documents from the U.S. military show that American success in the Afghanistan war has been exaggerated since the beginning. We'll talk to a reporter who broke that story at the Washington Post. Plus, some of the most inspiring and most shared links on social media were spread by Russian-backed bots. We'll find out why. That and more coming up tomorrow on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Tomorrow at 6:30, Kate talks to state lawmaker John Nygren about his latest bills aimed at dealing with Wisconsin's opioid problem. That's tomorrow at 6:30 on The Morning Show. Up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then, what if you could look at a log that details every moment of every day of your life for 10 years? We'll meet a guy who's been doing just that since 2010 and find out what he's learned about himself. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.